Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Midwestern Social Scientists, episode 51. I am Dr. Kid Pietrantonio, and with me, as always...
This is Keith McIntosh.
All right, we did a good job this week, Keith. I actually didn't interrupt you or anything, so I'm pretty proud of myself.
I wonder if there'd be a list of descriptions, but no.
I saw it in your eyes. I saw that you were waiting for it this week, and I was like, nope, I'm gonna leave them hanging.
So, we pulled it off.
So, real quick, before we start in the show, just want to thank everybody who donates on Patreon. Again, our Patreon page is www.patreon.com/Midwestern. Go ahead, feel free to donate. The reason we're able to do a YouTube version is because of the donations from Patreon. So please donate, help us out. Each episode takes a long time to make and advertise and do all that stuff for. So if you feel willing and you think the content is worth it, please donate at www.patreon.com/Midwestern. Okay, so let's get into the topic this week. But Keith, we have a special guest because you and I are terrible millennials.
That's true.
Like we don't know anything about technology. I mean, I play video games.
We use it. We use it nonstop.
We use it, but we really don't know anything. And I think we wanted to do this topic, or at least I really have. But we've kind of felt like we weren't smart enough in this area to talk about it. Everybody's talking about it, but I wanted somebody who knows a little bit about technology to be on the show. So our guest today is a wonderful man who has worked in the IT industry for 15 years. What was going on in the IT industry 15 years ago?
Yeah, jeez, can't even remember.
What year was that? 2002. That was like no YouTube.
Post 9/11.
That's why he got into it, because of post 9/11. Not much. I mean, think about how much has changed. It's pretty amazing. So he, imagine he's seen a lot in the IT world. Go on.
Yeah.
He's a project manager. His name is Colin Spears. Welcome, Colin, to the Midwestern Social Scientist Podcast. Hooray!
Hey, thank you. Welcome, Colin.
Yeah.
So, the topic we're going to be talking about today, of course, if you've read the title of the show, is net neutrality, which is all the rage on the internet. It's all the rage in the world right now. I mean, if you go to Reddit, it is literally on the top of every single subreddit. It's all over YouTube. And, yeah, Colin, can you tell us a little bit? I mean, you don't have to expect a giant explanation of it. It's a big problem, but kind of what your understanding of what net neutrality is, and then I'll jump in with kind of what I know too.
Right. So net neutrality is the idea that internet service providers, ISPs, I'll refer to them as ISPs from now forward. That's a little bit easier. Will deliver content to their end users, to us, with no bias involved. So it doesn't matter where the content is coming from, that content will not be altered. The speed of it won't be altered. It won't be edited. It won't be censored in any way. It will come directly to you as is, same speed as everything else. There won't be any economic or political biases and how you get it. So that's the concept that was pretty much the regulation that the government, the FCC, promoted for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Until this week. And so this week they decided that that internet service providers should have the ability to regulate the traffic that comes through their networks as they see fit. Mm-hmm. So what that means is there's a lot of externalities to this. So a lot of potential issues. Like, for example, one of the basic examples would be, let's say your ISP, Time Warner, or somebody like this, has a contract with NBC News. Maybe they won't show you CBS News, or maybe CBS News will be slower. So when you try to access the site, it will take longer to load, but NBC News will load faster, for example. Or maybe if you tweet something about Time Warner they don't like, maybe they will censor that tweet. Wow. Or a partner company they could potentially do that. If you tweet something about NBC, they can potentially censor that. So they can control all the data that's flowing through their network. And so they have the potential to do that. That does not mean that they will do that, and there's no plan at any major ISP so far to do that. In fact, most of them are saying they will not do anything of this nature. However, we do have an example in the past. I believe in 2005, Comcast was the first ISP to actually block traffic from a site. It was a BitTorrent. So it was a torrenting site, and they saw a lot of bandwidth coming through. And, you know, they got a lot of complaints from various media companies about intellectual property. So the media companies were saying, like, movie companies or movie studios or music companies were saying, basically, that they're facilitating this theft of their intellectual property. So, and it was taking up a lot of bandwidth for the ISP. So that they basically cut BitTorrent off. Huh. The FCC said, you can't do this. They went to court, and the court said that unless the way that ISPs are regulated, the FCC has no ability to do anything about it at the time because they weren't considered a common carrier. Kind of like how we look at phone companies or railroads or something like this, mm-hmm. where it's a public good. So there's regulation around the public good. Just a brief example of that. And pretend that a railroad charged you instead of based on the amount of the weight of the freight that you want to transport, mm-hmm. they charged you on the value of it. Or they just said, no, we won't carry your freight. Or we're going to put you on a slow track because we have a contract with your competitor and we'll put them on a faster track, mm-hmm. et cetera. So we don't allow this in railroads because it's considered a common good. They're going on tracks that are partially at least funded by the U.S. government. So we say this is a common good. Telephone companies are not allowed to do things like this either. However, it's been an argument, and there's been a lot of court cases around this, around ISPs. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Keith, any initial thoughts or impressions?
It just seems like a really complicated topic, and I'm interested mostly in this idea of the common good and how you decide what the common good is. And just the fact that, like, anything like a railroad, for instance, at one point in time was cutting-edge technology. Everything at one point in time was cutting-edge technology. And it seems like a really difficult thing to take something that's completely newfangled and superfluous and unnecessary, and then at some point say, hey, it's crossed a threshold, and now it's like the beating heart of the country. Like, this is something that's everybody needs. This is part of the common good. I don't know how you determine something like that. It just seems really tricky.
Well, and the movement seems to be, like, you know, under the Obama the Obama regulations was that to treat it essentially like a utility, right? That everybody had to have equal, like, you know, like, I don't get better water than my neighbor. You know, like, we all get the same water. I don't get, you know, a better fire department than my neighbor. Everybody has equal access. There's no, like, necessarily profit in the quality of the product you're getting. Which I think keeps everybody on, like, an even playing field. And I think that's what's kind of beautiful about the internet right now is, you know, anybody who can afford a bandwidth connection, which is relatively cheap, can have a voice, you know, or contribute. And there's this interesting piece of culture about, like, tying everybody together. Like, you know, everybody sees whatever's trending on YouTube, and it gives kind of people a common voice or a common culture. But I could see, you know, a potential like YouTube being, you know, regulated by Comcast, and only if you pay the extra, you know, you pay the YouTube commission, you know, you get the top videos or you get the whatever's trending. And so it becomes almost like a Studio 54 situation or something where, you know, you have to pay to, if you pay or you're cool enough or whatever, you can get in. It's really, really scary. I think it's very frightening to me. It's been interesting seeing, you know, the world kind of all be pretty much against this, but then they pass through anyway. So.
Yeah.
Well, there are some, I, in all honesty, I don't have a strong opinion either way. However, I think that I can see both sides because I do work in the I work in IT. I don't work in networking. I don't work in networking infrastructure, these type of things. But I do also work for a business that is a for-profit business. So I kind of understand some other motivations. One issue that, that from the ISP point of view and also the current government, the current administration's point of view is that this is not the past. We can say that most ISPs for most of the history of the internet have been net neutral. That's been a kind of common philosophy, this almost libertarian type philosophy that's been part of the internet. However, things have changed, and what's changed is that, for example, I just read today that I'm not sure how accurate this statistic is, but they said that one third of the internet traffic during prime time is now going to over the top services. So this would be like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, YouTube. And so the effect of this is, because of this cutting the cord phenomenon that millennials don't want to purchase cable anymore, ISPs are losing money on their cable contracts. And the companies that are competing with them are using the ISP's infrastructure for free to compete with the ISPs. So Netflix is taking market share away from Time Warner, but Time Warner has to allow Netflix to use the full speed of their system. And Time Warner provides that infrastructure, which they invest billions of dollars in creating and maintaining. And so that's one thing. The second one would be that I can think of off the top of my head is that in an industry like this, there's not much customer loyalty. You know, a lot of people will switch if they get an ad in the mail and they say, okay, you get higher bandwidth or a cheaper bundle. And then for 6 months, you pay a very low cost. People will switch back and forth like this based on price or availability of service if they have an option. So how do you get market share in this type of situation if you're a company? You compete on availability of the service, stability, speed of the service. And the margins are really low, actually, in the profit because it's so competitive and people just swap back and forth all the time. You don't have much leverage as a company. So what's the way that you can compete? You can say, okay, I know what my users look at because they do track these things. And so if I know that YouTube is hot, but something else is not hot, then I can say these other video services, I'm going to slow them down and focus my resources on YouTube. And if somebody does want these other services, they can just pay a premium for that. So I can go directly where my customers are. This helps me be more competitive in the marketplace. So that's from a corporate point of view. It gives them more flexibility.
So the first thing, Colin, like that first point that you made about using the ISP's basically infrastructure to destroy them, that's something I had never thought about before, and that's a super valuable perspective. Thanks for bringing that up, because that just like broke my brain a little bit, and it kind of shows like how far on, like, you know, I live so far in like Reddit world that's just so anti net neutrality that I hadn't necessarily thought of that. Where my brain also goes off of that is because there's a little bit of a tautological issue here, right? The reason people are cutting the cord is also because traditional television has not kept up with the needs of millennials. So I get what you're saying, but then I would also make the argument a little bit that that's their own fault. You know, that it's kind of like why Blockbuster went out of business, right? Blockbuster had the chance to purchase Netflix. They didn't. They were like, oh, we're going to stick with our own DVD. We're going to stick with whatever. And now they're gone because they didn't keep up with the technology. So I don't know. Thoughts, or Keith, thoughts on that?
No, I just think it's interesting. It seems to me like there were two, roughly speaking, two different businesses. One was providing you access, and the other was as a content provider. And those things are like overlapping now. I was curious about other countries. Like, what do you know what the situation is? You may not, but in Canada or in Europe or in other countries, do they have the equivalent of net neutrality?
I just today I briefly looked at that just a little bit. Only two examples, and these are relatively small countries, so I'm not sure their situation is relevant to the United States. But I know in Switzerland, the ISPs on their own, there aren't many in Switzerland, have said that they are for net neutrality. And so they're taking it upon themselves to kind of like to form an industry standard, which is fine, like a framework that the industry will follow, that they will be net neutral and this is what it means in Switzerland. In Hong Kong, I also looked up that this is also, you're talking about a city state, almost of a semi-independent city state of like 7 million people. So they are completely open. The market is like Wild West. There's almost no regulation on ISPs. And
more like the Wild East.
So they haven't censored anything, or none of the ISPs are censoring. They're not using two different speeds for different content, nothing like this. So this is one thing that this goes back to what a current administration and a lot of libertarians argue, is that having less regulation will create more competition, and then companies will not be able to do whatever they want because people will just keep switching service to something that they like. And maybe in the U.S., in our situation, you have a lot of states where it's, for example, let's say where I live, in the suburb I live in of Columbus. I believe it is, and this is the case in most states, it would be illegal if my suburb wanted to tear up the ground, put their own fiber optics in, and then negotiate a price with a flat rate with the ISP for outside service. Okay, because that's because of regulation at the state level, because of lobbying from the ISPs. So basically, the regulation that's in place to prevent local companies and local governments from competing with ISPs or negotiating set prices with them for local areas was put in place by the ISPs lobbying the local governments. So when the ISPs say that they want deregulation, they only want the deregulation that will enable them to maintain their market share in these areas and maintain their monopoly status. Mm-hmm. in a lot of areas of the United States, right? They don't want more competition. So it's kind of a... They're saying one thing, but they're doing another. They're saying no regulation, basically no regulation that limits our ability to gain more market share. That's what they're really saying.
Wow.
Regulation that protects us, that's great.
So first of all, I just want to recognize, like, Keith, how awesome was that when you just asked, are there any examples in the other countries, Colin just pulled two completely amazing answers out of his ass, and it was so awesome. He's like, well, I was reading it earlier today. Here's an example in Switzerland and Hong Kong. That was awesome. So that might have been the best answer. Awesome. That might have been the best answer to a question we've ever gotten from a guest. So that was pretty fantastic.
Okay.
There actually is an example in the United States where they've kind of done something different in Chattanooga, which I believe is Tennessee, right? They actually have their internet as a utility. And so the people pay $70 a month, and they get 1,000 megabytes per second internet. It's all fiber. Everything in the city is like regulated all by the government. There's no profit to be made other than keeping it up. So actually, there are places in the United States that have full on just it's kind of interesting. It's like, in a way, it's like hyper-regulation makes it more free in a kind of a strange way. It's you're right, Colin. It's kind of backwards or inside out in a weird way. I think it was represented. Comcast put out this tweet that the internet made into just a fabulous meme, where they were basically like, we're for net neutrality, but let us do this. But even if we do it, we're not gonna abuse it. But please let us do it. Like, and they just kept going back and forth, and it was so funny, the memes that came out of it. Just people going, like, let me do it, but don't let me do it. But let me do it, but I won't abuse it. But let me do it. And they were using like all kinds of. It was really funny.
Where did you read that about Chattanooga? That blows me away.
I read it on the internet. On the free internet.
Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea the background to that? Do you know a little bit more about like what they had to do, kind of politic wise, to make that happen?
I don't. The only reason I know it at all is because somebody gave it as an example, and while we were sitting here talking about it, I was like, oh hey, I'm gonna check this out and just make sure it's legit. And it's legit. Yeah. But I haven't dug into any depth beyond that. So.
That's really interesting. I think they were trying to do something like that in Philadelphia some years ago and couldn't pull it off. It got shut down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be hard. I mean, you have to have the infrastructure in place, and you got to be able to afford the infrastructure, and like just a city government to be able to afford something like that's got to be pretty tough.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Colin, do you know what's the name of the FCC chairman currently? His name's like Pi.
Pi, yeah, I don't remember his first name.
Is it Ajit?
Pi is his last name, yeah. Is
Ajit Pi?
That sounds correct, yeah.
I think so. So Ajit Pi is this guy who's kind of a, I don't know, he's kind of like a marketing guy. He used to be, I just checked, his name actually is Ajit Pi. He used to be a chairman or an executive for Verizon.
Executive, yeah, he was.
And now he is now he is the FCC chairman. So it's kind of in the Trump tradition of making like the Exxon Mobil person the Secretary of State or whatever. It's just like really bizarre. He has kind of been reframing this or trying really hard to reframe this as like internet freedom. That we are kind of letting the reins off. I think the act, even though they can't pass a law, they can pass like a regulation, I guess, in the FCC. The regulation is like the Internet Freedom Act or something like that. And that like kind of letting these companies all compete will ultimately produce like better examples. And there's this absolutely hilarious video that he made where he basically said, like, here's seven things you can do on the internet even if net neutrality is repealed. And it's like, you can still Instagram your food. You can still do the Harlem Shake. You can, like, and it's just, like, so bad. And then just to show how disconnected this guy is, he actually put himself in front of a green screen in the video. Like, and something happens in the background, but foolishly, like, put a video of himself on the internet in front of a green screen, which just allows people to go wild and have him, like, looking at anything, you know, in the background. It's kind of like the Shia LaBeouf, like, the do it or whatever thing. And so some of the things people have been doing is just wild. But I don't know. I just wanted to see what your thoughts are or either of your thoughts on kind of the Verizon chairman becoming the FCC chairman and kind of reframing this as internet freedom. So,
It sounds like Operation. When you say internet freedom, I keep thinking of Operation Freedom, like whatever the rock. Yeah,
yeah,
rock. Like, we're gonna free the hell out of these people with bombs.
Right.
But no, I think this is common of the Trump administration. In that, so the Secretary of Education is someone who wanted to basically reduce the funding of public schools. And she spent most of her time in education doing that to support charter schools and alternative schools, parochial schools. So she's now this person who was very much anti-public school is now the Secretary of Education. HUD secretary.
Helen DeVos.
Helen DeVos.
It's our Betsy, HUD secretary, I think, isn't it?
Has no experience in HUD. So this is common. Our environmental and protection agency person was somebody who sued the environmental protection agency before, and doesn't believe in climate change. So, yeah, this I don't know. I mean, I think that this guy from but what's interesting about the FCC chair is that his boss came out like a week or two ago. His former boss was interviewed and said that the net neutrality repealing the net neutrality regulation will have nothing to do with their future plans for expansion, for Verizon's future plans for expansion into other markets, or how they plan to go about just expanding their infrastructure so they can increase their bandwidth or provide better services to their customers. He said it's not going to change anything, which is pretty much the, directly refutes a lot of things that the FCC chair is saying, which is not surprising, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm curious about the topic of censorship. I mean, in a world where an unpopular tweet or something like that can get pulled off or blocked, I mean, do you think is part of your fear that kind of new social environment we live in with the internet will get filtered to the point where we're not able to talk to each other in a way that we are now or something like that? I mean, what is the sort of worst case scenario if it played out in kind of the darkest way?
The worst case scenario, I mean, with corporations, I'm not sure there's a strong corporate incentive to actively go about censoring things. So what I mean is, if you type something in a tweet, one of the words will be censored out of the tweet, or you're not allowed to type it or something like this. Obvious censorship. The censorship I worry about is if a company, let's say Fox News or CNN or NBC, if they make a contract with an ISP, they will not show content from other news organizations that they compete with, or slow down that content to the point where we say throttle it down to the point where it takes so long to open a page, it might time out or is basically unusable for the consumer. To drive traffic to a site that's preferable. That's the type of censorship I'm concerned about. And I think that could be something real, because some media companies are willing to pay a lot of money to drive traffic to their sites, especially in a situation where print media is dying and online media, how they make money with advertising, it's still something that's in its infancy, to be honest. And if they know they can get guaranteed traffic to a site, or a guaranteed percentage of traffic moved to a site, then that will be lucrative for everybody involved. I don't know how the consumers will respond to that, but like I said, in a lot of areas of the country, they won't have a choice. What's the option? There's no option. So in major markets, they will have an option, but in a lot of smaller rural areas, there is no option. So another thing I'm concerned about, this isn't really about censorship, but it's more about privacy. I kind of believe that our idea of privacy is slowly dying, and that might be inevitable. At my current position, we collect metrics. We have products and services that are web-based, and we collect metrics on, we call them usage metrics. Every time you click on something, every time you search something, every time you log in, you log out, wherever you go in the application, track that. And it goes to a giant database, multiple databases, and we can run reports on that information. ISPs are collecting information about our traffic and what sites we go to. I believe don't quote me on this because I'm not 100% sure, but I believe they have to anonymize that traffic, but they're allowed to collect it by law. Mm-hmm. And they sell that data to various companies because marketing departments want to know what you look at, how often you look at it. And they can use that data to try to figure out your gender, your ethnicity, your age range. They can correlate it back to these things, and then they know how to target you. And this is a multi-billion dollar industry. Marketing analytics is huge. And this data, this is not going to stop. And I think these ISPs will also do things that they can, in a way that they can collect more invasive information in the future so they can sell it. And they'll be allowed to do that because you're using their service. Your data is flowing through their system, and they're going to say, it's like a pipe. If the water flows through my pipe, I should be able to determine, you know, how much water gets in, the quality. I should be able to do whatever I want. It's my pipe. Mm-hmm. You know? So.
Yeah. Keith, didn't you used to work in kind of that a little bit when you worked?
Market research?
Yeah, market research.
Yeah, a little bit. Nothing too sophisticated, but I can appreciate the desire to have that kind of data.
Yeah. You know, what I was thinking off of Keith's question and Colin, I'm going to tie it into the privacy thing because it kind of ends up in a weird place. But Keith, when you asked about your nightmare scenario, where I could kind of see this going, and this is a really ugly place to take it, but is that we would have segregated internet. You know, where you would have like the Comcast people, which is owned by NBC, and they tend to be like part of what, GE, and they tend to be more liberal, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could see like Time Warner kind of leaning more like Republican or conservative, and the bubbles that we live in become even more segregated and separated, where you have access to kind of the liberal internet or the internet that's congruent only with your value system and people like you. Right, and you're never being exposed to information that's not congruent with what you want. Because if I'm paying, if there's an incentive for the company to give me content that I like, I'm endlessly going to be falling into my own confirmation bias, or in like, you know, like oh, I love BuzzFeed articles, so it's just going to give me more and more BuzzFeed articles over and over again, and I'm never going to be confronted with something that's the opposite. And that's already kind of happened on the internet. To some extent, where people only look at, but imagine if it got to the point where you started paying for, like, ISPs that only provided your content, and then, you know, at that point, think about the privacy thing, is you are completely, like, they've identified you down to, like, a personality type, almost, right? Like, oh, this is going to be the best package for your personality, you know, so that just feels very Orwellian to me, and so, I don't know, thoughts or reactions.
Well, I had the same. No, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Well, just I had the same thought. But I don't know if. I mean, it seems like it's essentially as bad as it could be. Maybe not quite, but I don't know how far that can go. You know, and I wonder too if people still have some desire to hear the other side. Maybe not in the spirit of being like. Like an intellectual ideally really goes on the hunt for information that's, you know, anomalous or outside of the box. But I wonder if there might be some kind of natural end to that. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. I mean, at the end of the day, we are still living in the same physical country, interacting with each other. I don't know how far we can go into like living in these different realities. But who knows?
I think it's already, how far we can go, that's still in question, but it is happening. I've seen the article, this is after the election, they were talking about what a typical liberal will see or progressive will see on Facebook compared to a conservative person's news feed. Mm. And they were very different because this was around the conversation around fake news. Who is this targeting? Who's seen this? And I can give a really good example of this. I have cousins. I'm obviously African American. I have cousins who apparently, based on their interests or whatever, on Facebook, whatever analytics are being collected about them, they see very African American specific news feeds. geared news feeds and advertisements that I don't necessarily see a lot. And I had a conversation with one of my cousins, and she was talking about some phenomenon that was trending on Facebook, and all our friends were talking about it. I think I was cut out of the loop because I had no idea what she was talking about. And I use Facebook almost daily, right? So several times a day I'm looking at Facebook or whatever, and I don't see these things trending. There are silos that are developing. And I think that this is, I don't think this is new. I think it's just getting more and more specialized. We have a lot of silos in America around entertainment, radio stations, movies people watch. So we're able now to just tailor our media more and more and more down to a personal level. So I'm not sure how much that ISPs will purposely, I don't think it's nefarious. It's not like 1984 or even some of the censorship stuff we're seeing in China or Russia. I don't believe they're trying to do it like this. They're just trying to make more money. At the end of the day, people don't sit in boardrooms. And I've been in boardrooms with VPs at companies, medium-sized corporations, and maybe not large corporations, at least director level. No one's talking about like plans for global domination or whatever. They're just talking about, how do I make more money in the next quarter or the next half year? And if they think that they can make more money by tailoring specific content to people based on their expressed interest through these analytics, that certainly. most definitely.
I guess the critique from my point of view is something like, I feel like I have observed a tendency in people to predict the apocalypse around the corner. Like, whatever is changing, it's going to be the end of the world, and it's not. And so I tend to, I'm a little bit skeptical when I hear kind of a too much of a doomy prediction, because it seems like, well, it probably isn't going to turn out that bad. Not that it's going to be amazing or perfect, but it'll be problematic. Everything's problematic. And I think that's worth contributing.
I don't know. I still like the idea of the evil CEO twisting his mustache. Yeah. See, Colin, you saw the fake meeting. You didn't see the Illuminati meeting that was going
on.
The real meeting was going on behind the scenes. You just saw the puppets dancing. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. That's the sociology part of me that's still in my heart screaming. but
the silo thing. Oh, go ahead, Kip.
I was going to say, no, go ahead, Keith. I got to regather my thoughts.
Oh, just the silo thing, that it's hard. Everybody wants to be around people like them. People who think like them, are into the music that they're into, the movies that they're into, see things politically the way that they do. It is a really tough thing to negotiate, because we all kind of know you get too soft, and you don't sort of see the full picture when you're only in a groupthink little bubble, you know, like a cultish little bubble.
Right.
So we all kind of know you need to be confronted with views that challenge your own and you know, different things, but it doesn't feel good. You know, it's like eating vegetables or something. Like, you know, you need to do it, but it's like not necessarily what you naturally gravitate to. So it's really tough to, in a kind of wise way, to draw a line here where you condemn that siloing, because there's something very normal about it as well.
Yeah,
you know, that's all.
I don't know, Keith. I think smart people know that they need to eat their vegetables. I think, like, you look at, like, I think about millennials in particular, and I think of like college students right now, and just like wanting to run with that self-righteous anger, and just reading article after article that like confirms that self-righteous anger. You know, and I don't know if those people are like, well, you know, maybe I should actually question whether, you know, this kind of like clickbaity article that makes me all like fired up and I send out 10 tweets about, maybe I should like look for counter evidence. I don't know if people are doing that, especially when it's something that's like a taboo topic, like, you know, inequality or race or sexism or, you know, something where to investigate the counterpoint would create a lot of dissonance for that person. You know, for me to, as a person who studies a lot about social class, to look into like the virtues of capitalism and how it's helped so many people is like, it's not something I would spend a lot of time on personally, because I've invested, but it'd probably be good for me to do that, right? I could argue my points better if I knew that stuff. But it would be kind of taboo in a weird way. So.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, sometime, though, I think, is it that people are more siloed than they were? I think, yeah, there is an echo chamber maybe that forms on the internet in certain areas of the internet with like-minded people just doubling down on what they already believe and reinforcing these beliefs. But sometime I think that the internet also allows us, especially in an anonymous way, to interact with people and to see ideas and beliefs that we would have never seen in the past because we would never associate with those people. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, like this goes back to something I read before. I was saying that what would be the immediate result if everybody spoke the same language fluently? Mm-hmm. And the result, somebody was joking that it'll be nonstop war because you'll exactly know what the person in the next country thinks about everything.
Right. Right.
It'll be war all over the world.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so there would be no filter anymore. There would be no gatekeepers kind of filtering or explaining away different things that you find objectionable or offensive. It'll just be all out there. You can see it. You can hear it. And the internet makes this happen. And then people can see what other people think. And they're like, oh, my God. How can somebody think something like that? I've never heard something like that in my life. But from that person's point of view, in their area of the country, in their peer group, in their socioeconomic level, that's completely normal.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point, Colin, that there is something, like there are tons of ideas or thoughts or people that I've been exposed to that have kind of shaped my value system that I would have never met if I had not had access to the internet. So I think that's a, I think it's a really good point. It kind of muddies the waters a little bit, right? We're getting a little bit of both. I want to go back just to kind of refocus us back into net neutrality just a little bit. One example of where, kind of going to what Keith said about how we have this nightmarish, this is the apocalypse. I remember people said the same thing when they started to cap data plans for Verizon and Sprint and AT&T. Mm. Remember, you used to have, everybody had unlimited, and then they found out that like 5% of people were using like 80% of the bandwidth by just like downloading torrents or whatever. Well, I remember that when they capped it, they were saying like 95% of people will not be impacted by this. Like nobody uses over 2 gigs, right? And very quickly, the technology caught up, and everybody used 2 gigs, and then they would jump it to 4 gigs. And I don't know if you guys ever remember, but when, like, you'd have your phone, and all of a sudden it would be like, do you want to add an extra gig for free? And you'd be like, okay. Like, and I remember that happened all the way up to 8 gigabytes. You know, I started with 2 gigabytes per month, and then it ended with 8 gigabytes. And then this critical moment happened where T-Mobile had a commercial, and it might have been like a Super Bowl commercial or something, and they were like, we're going back to unlimited. And within 2 or 3 months, both AT&T and Verizon had to go back to unlimited. And so now, like on my Verizon phone, I have unlimited data, and I pay about what I probably would have paid, you know, in before if I wanted unlimited data. But and eventually the market actually did make that happen, right? That wasn't a choice. I mean, they wanted to throttle the data plans. But eventually somebody, one of those three companies, you know, I guess there's four if you go at Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile are kind of the big ones. And then there's some smaller ones. But one of those companies finally was losing enough market share where they had to pull out the big gun again. And so I'm wondering if something similar could actually happen with this net neutrality thing where they start doing like the YouTube plan, the Facebook plan, the Instagram plan, and then finally somebody just comes back and goes, no more, you know, we're going unlimited, back to net neutrality, and it becomes almost like a marketing scheme again. Do either of you guys see something like that possibly happening?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I don't think that... I think that companies, at the end of the day, every company I work for has the same goal. Maximize shareholder wealth. So if they feel that there's enough evidence to support a shift in their sales strategy, a radical shift, and they think they can get an X amount of market share and maybe sustain that, they'll do that. There's not a lot of business is pretty practical. There are not a lot of ideologues in corporate boardrooms. There are some, but for the most part, it's like what works. And what works is what increases the bottom line. And that's on a quarterly or yearly basis. So, yeah, certainly. But that means that enough consumers have to object to anything that they do and start moving a certain direction. There's only a few companies, right, like you said, and there's a lot of consumers, and the consumers ultimately have the power, but the consumers are not organized. So usually what happens is to get a big shift, you have to get people upset enough with the status quo that they start moving a certain direction. They start disengaging, right? And that's not always easy to do. I think a lot of people just kind of accept the situation, like most of the time, and just keep moving, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, what I would do. I mean, to be honest, I think I would just, it would be fine. Like, my internet experience would be pretty much identical to what it is now, and I probably would just move on. You know what I mean? I don't, even though in principle maybe I would dislike it, I have a hard time believing I would really make it into an issue.
Do you guys feel like, though, that the internet is kind of like a unique entity, that unlike the railroads or even television or anything else, we are all so dependent on the internet for, you know, paying bills, like transportation, getting around, our jobs, communication, basically every avenue of our life? Do you think that there's something to be said for, like, this is a special case where we kind of can't just let, like the market decide, or, like, kind of corporate profits decide? This is really something that's completely unique, that has never existed in history before. There's never been something that's, like, been so integrated into, like, psychosocial life for human beings, and that this needs some kind of special protection.
I kind of side on that. It's more like a public good, and I think that it's a critical public good. I understand the business side, so what I would advocate as well as regulation would be, so the regulation I would advocate would be something like this. You don't have pure neutrality. You never have had that. Right now, ISPs do throttle bandwidth, especially when you're torrenting a lot or using Netflix a lot. It does happen already. It's been happening. Uh-huh. I can tell you that firsthand. So, however, sometime when they throttle content or change the speed of content you want them to, for example, voice over IP uses the same network, and you want a 911 call to get priority over somebody surfing CNN, for example. What we really are concerned about, and a lot, I think what we spend a lot of time talking about, is when they start changing speeds, they start changing speeds for things that are economically or politically related. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should have some regulation that they can't do this in their economic interest, or they can't change the speed for political content or something like this. They can't censor content. But speeds of content, I honestly don't know. I kind of understand both sides. And there's just one example I want to give for this very quickly. I know we're almost out of time, but there's Netflix. They do what they call peering. So they pay ISPs to get their bandwidth, to have additional speed for their bandwidth coming from Netflix to the ISP. That's why now you can load Netflix a lot faster than you could in the past. There's less buffering than there used to be. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, but from the ISP to your house, the bandwidth doesn't change. It's the same, full speed out. So still Netflix is using a disproportionate amount of the bandwidth going out, and they're not paying anything for that. I think that the government can come in and do something like crazy, you know, like they used to do. Actually contribute some money for research and development, or to support this infrastructure they say is for the common good. Help subsidize some of these ISPs because they're building this bandwidth out. You can't tell companies, well, you have to spend billions of dollars to support this, and you're supporting the common good, and although your profit margins aren't really that great. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is not really the correct approach. I think the correct approach is probably for the government to get involved. If you're going to regulate, then you should pay to help support this framework that you want to regulate, that you believe is part of the common good. If you believe it is, then some tax money should go to support it, just like it goes to utility companies, for example. Some utilities, anyway. That's not purely a private industry in most states. So why should the ISPs for the internet if it's so important?
Yeah. What do you think, Keith? If you had to kind of come up with a solution, or where's this heading, what would you say?
No, I think what Colin said makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. I mean, it does seem like while even like Hollywood movies being exported all around the world has had some kind of profound, I think, sociological impact in terms of spreading similar images and ideas, and like there's been a tremendous movement in the past 100 years or so to kind of unite the world through media. But the internet obviously is like the you know, the most intense, potent, powerful form of that. And the idea that everyday citizens without any real power can talk to one another, or that you can communicate with somebody on the other side of the planet, is just absolutely unreal. And I don't think we've already seen the consequences of that to some extent, but it's still a brand new thing, you know, and it'll take, I'm sure, many more decades or a century or so to really have a full appreciation for it. There is some sense that I think a lot of people who are maybe kind of science fiction nerds have, that we're building some kind of global brain, and that maybe it will give rise to AI or something like that. And messing with that seems like not a great idea. Being in control of it seems like a good idea, but it seems like a very positive thing that humanity has this way to communicate, because there's been so much tribalism and division in the past, which is really often due to just geography and like borders in some degree or another, like literal borders, or like an ocean can be a border, or political borders, and that breeds misunderstanding. So I think all in all, it's a really positive thing that the world is connected, and messing with that connection is obviously dangerous. So that's my two cents.
Wow. Yeah, that global consciousness, that's from like a psychological standpoint, that's really interesting, because it's kind of like a collective unconscious, except it just is. It like really is conscious. So that's a strange thing to think about. You know, I'm going to go a different direction. I think that the internet is going to become such a huge part of everybody's life in the next 20, 30 years, that I actually think that the language that people are going to start using is like that it's a human right. And that access to the internet is a human right. And even though right now it kind of feels like things are maybe leaning toward a more like capitalistic kind of, you know, ownership, like people controlling content, I just think that there's so much creativity and you have so many people working that even if this net neutrality thing kind of did become the worst nightmare, like it's exactly what Colin kind of outlined at the beginning, where it's being censored for economic reasons, it's being censored for political reasons, I think somebody would create something that would allow us to get around that or escape it, and that people in mass would move towards something new really, really quickly if it got them back to like that same feeling of freedom that the internet provides. Because to me, it's kind of Pandora's box has been opened here with global communication. And to like censor it in any way or close it back down, I just really feel like can't happen anymore. So my guess is that in like 30 or 40 years, it's going to be kind of a human right. And that no matter where you go, you're going to be on the internet at all times. you know, almost to the point where, you know, I could see people like going to the hospital. Oh, they don't, their internet connection's down. We like need to get them to emergency, like the emergency room. We need to like get them help immediately. You know, like somebody, there'll be like an industry designed to like make sure nobody ever loses access, because it would be such a travesty to lose access to everyone else. It would almost be viewed as like cruel for a person to not be connected anymore. They would be like isolated. So I could see it. That's where I think this is inevitably going, is that people are going to view as like this technology is just essential to function as a human being, and to not have it is wrong. So I think inevitably it's going to become free and cheap and easy. But then I think there will always be higher end versions of that, where people will pay for like the premium content in some way, shape, or form. But just that basic access will become universal. So that's my guess of where it's
going. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, so, but any other last thoughts as we kind of start to wrap up here, Colin?
I would just say that I kind of agree with you, but as you know, I've lived in China, and I can tell you that you can have economic growth, and you can have people using the internet every day, and it can still be regulated and censored. Wow. You just need to hire enough people. Because of the firewall that they have up, and they block various content from like New York Times or Washington Post or BBC or even any Google service. So to get around that firewall, people have software that they use. You can get it online. There's various companies, and you can basically create a tunnel so through the firewall. Okay. So it's a VPN, a virtual private network. China now has the ability to determine that you have a VPN and even cut that access off. So, and they threaten companies that companies were using it for a variety of reasons. They don't want their intellectual property, that digital data going through Chinese servers to connect to their home offices. Well, if they're based in China, connect to their home offices back in the US, they might send proprietary information. They don't want that going through a Chinese server, so they have these VPNs. So China basically told all companies in China, especially the foreign companies, if you're using a VPN and you don't have a license by next year, 2018, we will cut off your VPN. And you will be limited to what's available in China. So as you can see, China's economic growth the last 30 years has been amazing. People use the internet every day. In some ways, they're ahead of us in a lot of e-commerce platforms, where they are purchasing things with apps on their phone. So they can purchase almost anything with apps in major cities in China now. But all of that is still regulated. All of it is still controlled.
So, Colin, I have one question about that. You said if you could hire enough people, does that mean, did you mean that in China there actually are just people just sitting there looking for content all day?
Oh, absolutely. They have two groups of people, two main groups. They have people who just go around and who censor content to track major social media sites, because all social media in China is Chinese. All the Western social media, especially anything you can organize people in a big group, even things like meetup.com are banned. So a lot of these Chinese sites self-censor, but there's also people paid, and this is not a secret, this is not a conspiracy, the Chinese government admits this, who go around and they censor the internet. And they will actually go in and they will delete things off of websites. They don't usually trap people down and throw them in black vans or anything like that, but they do censor. And since all people have to, when you create any ID in China on a website, you have to use your real name, and you have to tie that back to your national ID. Everybody has one, or your phone, which is tied back to your national ID. So they always know who's posting something. They know who you are. And then you have other people called a Wu Mao Dang. It's basically like a 50 cent army. The joke is they get 50 cents to post something on the internet. What this means is they go around and they spread propaganda on behalf of the government, positive pro-government propaganda on websites as well. And they're also paid by the government. And so you never know who's, you can kind of tell sometime who's Wu Mao and who's not, because a lot of times they say the exact same thing. But you never know who's a real person and who's a real poster and who's being paid or not
say something.
So, and this is very common. They also infiltrate U.S. sites. If you go to any negative article about New York Times, in the New York Times about China or Washington Post, it's going to be full of people, and usually in broken English, saying anti-U.S. things, anti-Western things, pro-Chinese things. And a lot of times they're saying the exact same thing. And this is not coincidence. These people are not based in the United States. These people are being paid. Wow. And you can look this up on Wikipedia. Wu Mao, W-U-M-A-O, or 50 Cent Party. These people exist. So basically, all of that is to say that you can use the internet every day. It can be a functional part of your life. In China, everybody uses the internet. If you're under 70 years old and you have even some money, you're probably using the internet, at least on your phone. You're even purchasing things off through using your phone. Mm-hmm. All of this highly integrated in society, but it's still censored and monitored heavily.
Wow.
Heavily. So I'm not saying that's going to happen in the United States, and companies definitely aren't interested in that level of censorship. My point is more to say that don't think that just because people use the internet or the internet is more integrated into our lives than ever before, that means that it has to be a free internet. That's not necessarily the case. No, the technology is so good now, I can even block images that you send to somebody before they get to that person. So, yeah, China does this all the time.
Wow.
You send something offensive about the president, the current president, or the previous president, like an offensive image, they can tag that image. They know what that image file looks like. You try to email to that person will never receive it.
Oh my gosh.
This technology exists. This is not science fiction. This exists right now. So. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, some of that, actually, corporations do that here in America, too. They'll, like, get on and have, like, kind of fake commenters that kind of promote a website or promote an idea or promote a video
yes.
that has, like, you know, it'll be some funny YouTube video, but then there'll be a bag of Doritos in the background, and Doritos will get
yeah.
on that and start promoting it. And that's, yeah, I remember learning about that all the way back in college I can't remember, it was just like a media class where they showed how, like, they would go into high schools and kind of learn what's cool and then promote that online. And yeah, it was really, really strange. So, well, Colin, I don't know. I kind of feel like I would love to have you back on for an entire episode just to talk about the Chinese internet.
Yeah.
Cause that was fascinating. That last
sure.
like 5 minutes, I was just like, whoa, you know? So I think that was really, really cool. So, I really appreciate you coming on the show. That was a really educational, I mean, I think you may have been the most educated guest we've ever had in terms of like discussing the topic. We've had some experts on the show, and that's pretty impressive considering this is out of your domain. So I just really appreciate the research and yeah, thinking about it a little bit and everything. So I thought that was pretty awesome. So
thank you both for having me. It was a lot of fun, and yeah, I'd like to come back. We can talk about whatever you want. Trump's foreign policy, I got a lot to say. I have more to say about that and know more about that than this topic, actually. We can talk
wow.
about U.S. relations with China, censorship with China. I can talk about all these issues pretty well. So that's something we can discuss as well. Or just social issues potentially in China. I know you guys are social scientists. So, yeah, these type of issues, I pay special attention to.
That's pretty cool.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, everybody. So this was episode 51 of the Midwestern Social Scientists. Thank you very much for listening. I am Dr. Kip Pietrantonio.
And this is Keith McIntosh.
Hey, guys. If you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.